You're listening to Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland on bbsradio.com. We are the number one worldwide internet talk radio network on the planet. They tell me, listen to this, on the planet. That's why I call this show Going Global for Spirit. I will give you two phone numbers in a few moments. So pull out a pen and a piece of paper. I'll give you a worldwide number direct that you can call, and I'll give you a Canadian and United States number that you can call. You're welcome to call this entire hour. It is uninterrupted, no commercials. It's just me and a wonderful guest tonight that I'm really excited about talking with, Steve Mitchell.
Hi.
Renaissance Man. Hi, how are you?
I'm okay, thank you.
Mr. Mitchell is joining us from England. We've gotten him out of bed. And I bet
you have,
he
actually, did. Yes, how strange.
So, thank you so much for letting us do this to you. I'm so sorry.
Don't. It's all good fun.
I received your DVD, Dragons and Rings.
Yeah.
Down in Crop Circles, UFOs, and the Paranormal Quantum Theory. Boy, do we have a lot to talk about.
All in an hour as well. Oh,
oh no, we're going to have you back. There's no way. It took me what seemed... I'm sorry?
It's all right. I just said you won't fit it in, but let's go for it.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination. And then a CD that is Kala, K-A-L-A, Explore Your Spirit. And it's a www.exploreyourspirit.com. I encourage people to go to that and listen to some of this. It's Many Paths, One Destination. Enlightening shows with world-renowned authors, artists, teachers, and researchers. Thoroughly enjoyed that. Thank you very much. I encourage people to look into that. But your Dragons and Rings, how long did it take you to put this together?
Well, a lot of people have asked me this. The actual putting together of the video itself, the DVD itself, didn't take so long. Obviously, I had to kind of jaunt up and down the country and get various kind of bits of footage for it. Which involved everything from kind of wandering around stone circles to going up in helicopters. The script itself was really based on probably, you know, a good 25 years, maybe even 30 years of kind of thought and work. And I guess that's kind of the result of that. So you could argue it either took me 30 years or it took me a few months, depending which way you look at it.
So you worked on the script continuously and then went back and plugged pictures in, your images?
Yeah, the first thing I did really was put my thoughts together. The thoughts are based on a series of lectures, come workshops, come talks that I've been doing for a few years based on all of this research. And so I developed that into a script, which is now a good kind of year or so old. So it's kind of developed even further since then, and then went off and filmed it, basically.
And what comes next after this one?
Well, I'm working on a book version, which expands on everything within the script, because even, you know, the hour DVD, it just touches the tip of an iceberg.
Yeah.
When you watch it, it's quite complex, it's quite detailed. But it's just kind of the tip. So obviously I'm going into all the kind of little things that I put in there into greater depth. At the moment we're also doing some work on Sky Television, putting some series together for that as well. Out of
Sky Television. What is Sky Television?
Do you have Sky in America?
You know?
Channels. Lots of channels.
Lots of channels. You know, I'm going to have to look in that. Just like SKY?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Television. I'll have to look into that. I apologize. I'm not familiar with it. I apologize.
It's absolutely fair. It's like your channels. It comes in on satellite, and you just have loads of channels on there, a few hundred channels.
I'll have to check into that. This DVD is a wonderful teaching tool.
Yeah.
Wonderful teaching tool. Do you have it in schools, or do you have it in metaphysical gathering places?
Not at the moment. We're obviously looking into the places that we can get it into and where it's applicable. Like I said, a lot of the work out of that came out of lectures, came out of talks anyway. So the reason it's kind of got that if you like, educational aspect to it, that kind of talking aspect to it, is because that's what I do. You know, I've been teaching for a long time anyway in various areas, so it's got that kind of feel to it. I guess what I'm trying to do with the book as well is turn that into a little bit more of a kind of workbook with kind of little ideas in there, bits for things to people to go and do, like, you know, learning how to dowse and how to test out all these earth energies and things like that, as well as the kind of psychological aspects to it and all the other bits.
You know, let me go back and tell our public, this is Steve Mitchell, and I'm going to read directly because there's so much that you've done in your past, I don't want to miss anything. It says, be prepared. It's Dragons and Rings by Steve Mitchell. And that can be misleading, public. It sounds like a game, and it isn't.
Mm.
It isn't a game. It's stone and crop circles, UFOs, and the paranormal and quantum theory. Now, Steve Mitchell, Renaissance man with an honors degree in both music and mathematics, which, of course, go together, worked as a musician with Warner Chappell, Warner Brothers,
yep.
Reality Entertainment, Australian television, and is a member of PRS. What is PRS?
I think it's PRS, actually, unless there's a misprint there. PRS is the Performing Rights Society.
Okay.
I haven't actually checked the sleeve to make sure that that's written out properly.
It is. It's written out properly. I said it incorrectly. I apologize.
That's okay.
You lecture. You do good workshops. You serve as a facilitator for events ranging from management training to alternative energies, quantum physics, NLP, and the British Society of Dowsers Special Research Group. You've made films for various groups, community, schools, education, police and health services, as well as having won a Young Filmmakers Award segment of film featured on television. You also are trained counselor, Reiki practitioner, and CHIOS master. I apologize. I do not know what that is.
Chaos.
And uses a combination of positive life-changing affirmations, shiatsu, which I love, NLP basic techniques, to enable people to affect constructive and valuable changes. You truly are a Renaissance man. You just throw a little bit of everything in there. I love the music and mathematics, because if you break down everything else that you listed here, it all falls under one of those categories.
Absolutely, and that's kind of the key to it. And you'll notice as well, as if you listen to the DVD, when I say listen to the underscoring, the music plays a very important part. I've chosen and composed various pieces very specifically for it, because it enables us, it takes us on a journey, it reaches specific parts of us. As you mentioned in there, I've done a lot of facilitating, a lot of working with very special groups of people, some of whom have learning disabilities and so forth. So again, I use the music in that element to kind of reach people and to enable transformation and change.
I love what you did with it, and I really encourage people, Dragons and Rings. It's an interesting an interesting way you've presented your knowledge and your research.
Mm.
That very, very interesting the way you've presented the whole thing. Excuse me, folks out there, here are some phone numbers so that you can call in with your questions, your comments, your feedback. If you've ever had any work with Steve Mitchell or you want to, please, by all means, call in tonight. Worldwide, that means any place except the United States and Canada, worldwide, 1-877-489-6350. Canada and the United States, you share a number, 1-888-228-4494. One more time, worldwide, 877-489-6350. United States and Canada, 1-888-228-4494. We're visiting with Steve Mitchell tonight of Dragons and Rings, although he has done numerous other things and is certainly capable of many more, as well as a wonderful CD that's called Kayla, Explore Your Spirit, Many Paths, One Destination. It's in an interview. It's various interviews with authors, artists, teachers, and researchers. Again, we're mixing that researchers and artists together, which I love in metaphysics. I'm a practicing psychic, so I see that all the time, that balance that goes on, and you've brought it so well to the forefront with Dragons and Rings.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it? You say there about, you know, intuitiveness, if you like. The half of, you know, a lot of that sort of stuff, if you like, came to me. It's something that you do a lot of research, you do a lot of reading, and then you get that intuitive kind of thing that comes in, that little spark, that little moment that says, da-ding, and puts everything together. It's exactly what happens in music. It's exactly what happens where you say you're kind of using your psychic abilities, all this sort of stuff, all from that same sort of one source. Whatever that kind of one source is, which kind of I explore somewhere in the DVD. I think something you mentioned there as well that I'll pick up on very quickly is the title, because everyone's asked me about that as well and where it came from. And essentially, yes, it does sound slightly confusing. I just love that kind of mythology, that kind of special magical feel to it. And it, to be honest with you, I did actually nick the title from lyrics from a band. But the dragon's element really is the old energy element, the energy of the earth, the energy of the universe, expressed both in quantum terms and in terms of that kind of creative, kind of magical terms. And the rings relate into the circle, both in expression of sacred geometry and in expression of the stone circles and ley lines and so forth that come into there. So to me, it kind of just manages to link everything together and has so many underlying, you know, you could do a whole talk on what are dragons and rings, couldn't you?
Yes. We'll have to do that sometime.
Yeah.
In the meantime, tell folks how they can get this.
I've got several websites. I'm having a couple of problems with them at the moment that I'm trying to resolve. You can go on to www.dragonsandrings.com, all one word. Or you can go to Reality Entertainment's website, or you can go onto Amazon.com and literally type in Dragons and Rings. It's available there. There's numerous sites available on the internet, so just do a Google search and you can pick it up anywhere.
On the back of the cover for the DVD is an intriguing question. Are we alone, or part of a multi-dimensional universe with the keys to other worlds at our fingertips? Now, when I first read that, before I even finished the sentence, I looked at that "are we alone" part and went, okay, we're talking ETs here. But once you read the rest of the sentence, the question, or part of a multi-dimensional universe with the keys to another worlds, to other worlds at our very fingertips, talk about that.
This is it. It's again in the kind of true nature of esotericism. One of the things that I tend to do is I lead people rather than give them the answers. I don't believe in saying this is exactly it, because I could not be right. You know, it's my perception, it's my view of everything, and people have to find their own truths, their own answers. So that's very, very important in there, that, you know, whatever kind of spirituality, if you like, whatever perception, whatever way you come from, you can find a truth somewhere in there. Some people might argue the existence of ETs. Certainly on a scientific level, we could, you know, argue that the universe is such a massive place that, you know, there's got to be something more than just us in there. But then again, the argument is, do we create our own universe? Are we our own, if you like, extraterrestrial or interterrestrial inside our own head? Are we our own kind of beings that manifest these universes? And that, for me, again, is one of the keys, that we have this kind of power within ourselves that we tend to block. And if you've seen the DVD, a lot of what I talk about is the way, and this is where NLP comes into it as well, the way we actually block our senses, block all of our senses, and our senses are capable of picking up so much information from around ourselves, everything from kind of the wonders of the colors, of the sounds, of the energies, of the feel of this kind of universe that we inhabit. And then we correlate that and we package it down to something very simple that we can understand. and kind of lose touch, if you like, with that magic, lose touch with that science, lose touch with the big picture, and kind of have this miniature picture running that we call reality, outside of which is something more.
That's what you're meaning by multidimensional.
Absolutely. There's two elements to it. On a scientific element, and we'll never manage to capture this in an hour, let alone in a kind of five-minute quick discussion. On a scientific level, scientists believe there are anywhere from 11 to 14 to 28, to whichever number they've come up with, dimensions. And where these dimensions are kind of questionable as well. My perspective is that we live in them all simultaneously. We are, if you like, multidimensional, and that's where I kind of get to at the end of this, that dimensions as we perceive it aren't necessarily out there. They're as much in here, inside our head, inside our own kind of representation and inside our own physicality as out there. And that's the key to it, really, to being able to empower yourself, to being able to appreciate, to be able to see the beauty, the wonder, the kind of magnificence of this massive thing that we call creation that's going on around us. And like I say, it's kind of something that we block rather than something that we actually access. Like I said, it's so tricky to even find a starting point. If you watch the DVD, you'll see my starting point is roughly about sort of 5,000-10,000 years ago with people mm-hmm. like the Egyptians, with people like the Pythagoreans, who had a concept, and again, in the book I go far more into this, they had this concept that the universe was an energetic being, that it was based around energy, and within that, the matter that we perceive is kind of just one aspect of that, and that obeys various rules, or seems to obey various rules that give us what we kind of call dimensions or a limited sense of dimensions, height, width, breadth, time, and so forth. But beyond that, there's kind of so much more to it, and it's that ability to, if you like, unblink your eyes, open your eyes, see beyond what you see, much in the same way that you do with what you do.
And I wonder sometimes how I do it. I wonder often how we do it as practicing psychics. I'm visiting with Steve this evening, a creator of Dragons and Rings, crop and stone and crop circles, UFOs, and the paranormal, quantum theories, and so much more on this. Perception, multidimensional states, geometry, intermittent work. I mean, just an amazing collection of both research, history, and possibilities. That's the way I looked at this DVD. I thought it was wonderful. You leave a lot of questions hanging as you go from segment to segment. At least in my head you did. You didn't say the questions, but they hung there. So I'm so glad that you're doing a book form on this, but my goodness, you know, where are you going to end it? Because with every book, you can only put so much in a book without overwhelming the public. So there's got to be a third or a fourth as you go bigger and bigger and bigger and deeper and deeper and deeper into this, which certainly you have the ability and the training to do and the natural capacity to do it. I just felt like even looking from the DVD, like you were holding back. There was so much more you could put out there. And I'm going, okay, what now? Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. I mean, you'll notice as well that I've kind of divided the DVD into nice little sections.
Yes.
And that each section kind of, you have a good 20, 30 seconds, a good, you know, amount of time to take on board, or maybe just pause it and say, right, I'm going to go off and think about that one, take it on board, you know, and you kind of mm-hmm. get about halfway through and you think, oh, is that it then? And then you get another bit and you get another bit. And that to me, it's magical because within each of those little sections, there's so much further than you can go. And this is, you know, in one way, this is why I left the DVD where I left it, because it allows the viewer, it allows that kind of interactive person to say, right, okay, what does this mean to me? What does it, where does it lead us? Where do we feel we're going to go? And thereby, each person can find their truth. Each person can find that kind of bit that they go, oh yeah, wow, you know. And if people are into, like you say, for example, sacred geometry, it's a kind of taster, kind of few minutes of such a huge, massive kind of area that in itself is in a way so complex, and in a way when it really comes down to it, so very, very simple. And that's the strangest bit of it, really. And I think, to me as well, you mentioned working with kind of people like the Dowsers Research Association. You come across a lot of people in this field who can write books and books on the mathematics of it all, on the science of it all, and look at this and correlate that and put all this together. And in a way, what they're doing is they're kind of going further and further away from that one central motive, that one central truth, that one central thing that underlines everything. And don't ask me what it is, because I'm not going to tell you. Because I can't write the book.
Well, there's a pure, when you get down to the simplest statement, there's such a purity to what started it all.
Absolutely.
I don't like the word innocence, because I'm not sure purity is the best word that I can come up with. And then we seem to get involved with it, and we try to make it more complicated, like you were saying, the mathematicians, make it more complicated than it really has to be.
We do. And I think, I mean, you've got to admit, if you want to break down life, the universe, and everything into a simple equation, one equation that does it all, it's as simple as we as humans, basically we're born, we procreate, and we die, and that's it. And because that's it, people want more, people look for more, they look for these answers, they look for the extra something special, they look for the beauty, they look for the magic, and I'm not saying that there isn't beauty or magic, by the way, but this is what we tend to do. We tend to complex things, we tend to add so many ideas into things, and what I'm trying to look at, I guess, is where these ideas have come from, where they lead to, but constantly maintaining that one little kind of point of focus, that one kind of simplicity to it all, that you can then say, well, okay, now we know that, now we know why we're doing this, now we can really enrich our lives with knowledge, with, if you like, magic word gnosis, which is not just knowledge, but it's knowledge through experience, knowledge through actually knowing something rather than simply either believing it or reading it. It's that kind of personal thing that's so important.
The knowing.
Mm.
The absolute knowing in the fiber of your being, as we say.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that comes down to knowing who you are and where you are.
Oh, my goodness. And it's so hard for most of us. That can change moment to moment.
I'll recount a little story for you. This is just a quickie. It's something that kind of happened to me. As I say, we get these inspirational moments every so often that kind of bring, if you like, knowledge to us or observation to us. And I was traveling home from a friend's a few months ago, and I kind of got lost. I was sitting in my car thinking, well, I don't know actually where I am. And then it occurred to me that I did know where I was. I was in the car. And because I was in the car, I was there. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I wasn't actually lost. I was there. And that was a really nice kind of thought, because I just sat there and thought, it doesn't matter where I drive, it doesn't matter where I end up, because it's always me, and I'm always, if you like, in the center of it, and I know who I am, and I know where I am, I'm here, and everything kind of suddenly becomes so very simple there, and then you kind of pop the old gas down, and off you go, and you find your way home. But you're already home, because you're always home.
That's part of that simplicity.
It is.
I love it.
It is.
We're making it complicated by saying that we have to be someplace else.
Absolutely. We seek. We constantly seek. And that is part of our psyche. That's part of the way our brain works. You know, we can't sit still. Well, not a lot of us can sit still. I guess there are some people who are quite happy to be where they are, quite happy to be in a certain life situation, but most of us are constantly seeking something else beyond where we are, little realizing that it's us who are seeking, therefore we've already found it. If that makes sense?
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm up onto something totally different, aren't I?
But these are thoughts that you have shared, you want to share. They wouldn't be coming out of your mouth. So that's good. That's very good. And if it sends you down a different part of thought, path of thought that you can share with us later in your creation, that's even better, as far as I'm concerned. This is Steve Mitchell that we're visiting with, creator of Dragons and Rings. And I hesitate to say author, because you're writing a book based on the work that you've done in the DVD, Dragons and Rings. If you're late in joining us, welcome to the show. We would love to have your calls and questions and comments and join our discussion about Dragons and Rings. Dragons and Rings is population, is a good word, of information about stone and crop circles, UFOs, and the paranormal, and that paranormal he stretches to all kinds of things, and quantum theory, which includes perception and time. And excuse me, I loved your piece on time. Time has always fascinated me. The idea that, yes, like you just said, you're in the car, we are here right now.
Yeah.
Okay, by the time I finish that sentence, I am not the person that I was 30 seconds ago.
You're not, but you also are. And that's the intriguing part of it. We are the sum of our parts, as they say. We are the sum of our memories, and we are the sum of our memories of the past, and we're also, conversely, the sum of our memories of the future, because we're already living in the future now from the time that I said we're the sum of our memories of the past. And that's where it kind of gets interesting as well. So time is... you don't have Doctor Who over there, do you? Do you understand Doctor Who?
Actually, we do have Doctor Who.
Do you?
I love it. It's a fun show.
Oh, cool. Well, he made this lovely statement in one of the kind of shows where he was trying to explain time, and he said time's this kind of curly-whirly, timey-whiny, stringy-wingy kind of thing. It's just like, yep, that's it.
He shows it with his stories, going back and forth.
Absolutely.
And to other universes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I like what you did by sitting in the car, and I call it losing time, or time just drags.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
It seems like it's, that was wonderful. This is Going Global for Spirit with Elaine Ireland on bbsradio.com. Excuse me, but you know that or you wouldn't be hearing this. We have two numbers to give you. Please join us in our conversation this evening worldwide. That number is 877-489-6350. If you live in the United States or Canada, please call on 1-888-228-4494. I love that phone number. It is such fun to say. 228-4494. So it takes a little to entertain me, doesn't it? How did you get involved in all of this, and how long have you been playing? Well, 30 years at least, because you've been working on this for 30 years.
Yeah, since I was a kid, basically. I tell so many different versions of the story. You have to, don't you? Because you get bored with the same version each time.
And depending on who you're talking to and what they can understand, yes.
Yeah, there's that element to it. I mean, part of it comes down to the fact that as a very young child, everything was absolutely magical. Everything was absolutely beautiful. It was full of wonderment. You know, we have these kind of, I don't know if fantasy is quite the right word, but we certainly have these realities that are way beyond the norm, and we all share these kind of strange realities. And I was also lucky enough to live very close to some very kind of beautiful sites, stone circles, ancient roadways, and so forth. So I always took an interest in them. And there was a kind of point in my very early childhood where I found myself challenged, where I found myself in a position unable to kind of take things on in the way they've been presented spiritually to me. And a lot of that challenge led me on to question. And I kind of found myself in a point where I appreciated or perceived this kind of magical world, this strange world that included everything, if you like, we use the phrase paranormal, esoteric, and so forth. But at the same time, the other side of my brain ran in a very scientific manner and said, well, how can it happen? How can we prove it? And of course, at school, at an early age, the physics that you're taught is very kind of basic physics, and it doesn't allow for the science, if you like. It doesn't allow for explanation of any of these events, any of these happenings, any of these strange things, any of these sensations, any of the way that we feel or perceive the world. And I guess what I've been trying to find is the explanation that suits both sides of my brain, the explanation that suits me both creatively and scientifically, mathematically, in a logical kind of sense. And that's where I kind of came across, if you like, quantum science, which really kind of looks at the energetic component of the universe, the energetic component of the universe that, like I say, the Pythagoreans, the Egyptians, the ancient Babylonians, the ancient Indian cultures, all of these people were able to express in a kind of both spiritual and scientific way, that we've kind of lost that kind of space where they meet, and yet they do. And having found that, it was like, oh gosh, the magic's back again, because now I kind of know it's true. Oh dear.
There's a truth to all of that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That was my journey. That's really, really where I've been. And like I say, you know, you have to correlate. You have to put stuff together. And so the journey that I've taken is evident within that DVD, is evident within the book. It's the questions that I've asked and the answers that I've found, both intuitively and scientifically. And that, to me, is amazing, because they do meet and they do kind of sit there quite nicely on top of each other. And for me, the explanation puts more reality there than simply pure belief.
Ooh, I like that statement.
Oh.
Reality.
Write it down.
Yeah. Use it in your book.
To talk myself. Yes, quick.
Use it in your... This is going to seem like an odd statement or odd question to you, probably. I hope you've never been asked this before. What do you think about little fairies and elves and that sort of thing? And I'm not asking you that just because you come from England. I have a reason.
Okay. My perception is that the universe, the reality that we live in, is immensely colorful in terms of energetic layers. Now, when I talk about energy, I'm actually talking about energy that you can measure. I'm talking about electromagnetic energy, gravitational energy, light energy, sound energy. All of these energies are linked, if you like, to one universal energy type. And what I truly believe is that, like I say, we actually block this out. We tend to blinker. We tend to focus on what we need to focus on as part of our survival mechanism, and we tend not to see beyond that very, very limited scope. And when we do perceive beyond that very limited scope, we're forced to find, if you like, a metaphor, a way to color that we are unfamiliar with. So what we tend to draw upon is what Jung called archetypes. We tend to kind of put these kind of pictures that have existed, if you like, in the racial consciousness, in this kind of conscious memory that we carry in our genetics, in our cells, and we put these kind of, we overlay these pictures. So some people will see this energy in terms of what you might call fairies or pixies or so forth. Some people will see it in terms of an ET type energy. Some people will see it in terms of an angelic energy. Some people might well just see or just feel, if you like, what they call energy, that kind of sense of something happening, something buzzing, some kind of change in maybe the colors, the lighting, and so forth. And what we're really doing is, like I say, trying to find an explanation for something that we're unfamiliar with, something that we don't perceive because we've taught ourselves not to perceive. Reich, who I mentioned in the DVD, did a lot of experimentation with this sort of energy. He called it orgone, and he kind of came up with this perception of what he called air, which are kind of energetic beings, if you like, energetic consciousnesses within this energy. And they were able to photograph these energy forms and reproduce them on film. And again, the kind of film version is nothing, if you like, what you overlay. So these energy beings in that sort of sense are kind of almost like gigantic kind of lit amoeba kind of forms that are floating around all over the place.
Oh, what we think of as orbs?
Yes, I was just about to get there.
Orbs.
What we, in terms of the true orbs, because obviously, you know, a lot of orbs have been shown to be everything from kind of dust mites to insects and so forth. But beyond the field of the kind of the basic kind of light anomalies, if you like, there are a lot more anomalies that have been captured on films other than simply that kind of round orb-like shape. It's quite interesting, something I thought about the other day. I don't know if I'm going to be able to put this one into words, but my perception, if I open my eyes beyond the physical and kind of see stuff, is of actually, rather than light, it's dark, round kind of dark balls, if you like, of energy that kind of flit around. And it's quite interesting that if you actually use an infrared camera, what it actually does is it reflects off of dark objects to make them look white. So I actually believe the energy that you're capturing in those states is exactly the opposite of what people think it is.
Now that's interesting. I have a friend here in Austin that has photographed orbs have started gathering at her lake place in the last 2 years. And she has many pictures, many, many pictures when they were remodeling and doing all kinds of things where the orbs did not show.
Yes.
But just in the last 2 years, we can be sitting on the patio and she can just be looking around and say, okay, do you see that over there? There are five sitting right there, right above that head. She has angel statues all over her yard. Can you see those? And maybe someone can and maybe someone can't, but when she takes a picture of it, it shows. And she's already counted them, giving you the location and the shapes, and there they are on the film, on the digital camera.
It's very, very interesting. If you go again, I'm going to use two examples. If you go into Reich's work, what he found was that these forms of energy responded to human consciousness, if you like, responded to us. So in some part of that explanation, there's this kind of link, there's this energetic link between ourselves and the energetic world. If you go into the realms of quantum science, then again, the energies that they're talking about at a quantum level, i.e. at a sort of very, 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 very small level that make up the universe, again, they're found experimentally that they respond to the expectation of the person who is working with those energies, who's measuring those energies. So it's very interesting that you can actually quite easily make these energies appear on camera.
She's gotten really good at it.
Yeah. And I think that ties into, like I say, this conception that if you look at the model that the universe that we live in is, and I hate using the word energy because it gets so, so misconstrued, because it isn't kind of this magical, amazing, well, it is and it isn't. Scientifically, like I say, you can actually say exactly what that energy is. But it seems that we're part of it, it's part of us, and therefore the response to it and the response with it is much like kind of string theory, the theory that we're all linked together and everything links within the whole universe. And that would make sense that, you know, consciously we appear to have this connection where there's a response both ways.
One of the images that was on the DVD showed two crystals that have an energy spark between them.
Yes.
Are you in agreement that energies can be healing, they can be helpful to us as human beings once they've been removed from their matrix?
Yes, absolutely. Energy has an effect, for want of a better way of putting it. The easiest way to, like I say, put it in terms of a model, one way of looking at it, is that as physical beings, we're also energy. It's as simple as that. The physical structure that we're built on is actually an energetic structure, like, say, a kind of electromagnetic thing which takes on board all the kind of light anomalies and everything else. Because that resonates, because that has a frequency to it, we are susceptible to other frequencies around us. We're susceptible to other energy around us. And that will have both a positive and a negative effect. One of the kind of classic examples, if you like, certainly in the current sort of situation is going into places like sacred spaces, into stone circles, even crop circles. Different people seem to react different ways. Some people come out feeling very elated, very enlightened, very spaced out, very kind of spiritually positive. And other people are kind of come out with headaches, feeling ill, with skin sort of rashes, all kinds of things. And I think it's more the way that we react, each of us, to these energies rather than energies necessarily being bad or good. They're simply there. They're simply a particular frequency of energy. And depending upon us at the state that we're in at the time will depend on how we react to those energies. So, yes, of course, they can be healing energies. There's a lot of work being done with sound and light energy, with specific frequencies that relate to specific frequencies within the body, specific organ responses, particular cell responses, whereby they've shown that using different frequencies will alter those cellular structures, will alter the way the organs are functioning, and therefore can have a positive beneficial healing effect as well as a negative effect.
I'm glad that you mentioned the scientific approach to this, because I'm a firm believer in crystals and the tinctures that come from crystals and so forth. I've seen it work too many times. I've worked with crystals for 30-plus years. But I've never understood the scientific part or why it would work. And yet I know that the ancients would drink, I mean, not just the ancients, but even pioneers, would drink certain tinctures for certain illnesses. And I know that crystals have been used in medicine in different ways. But I never did understand scientifically how it worked. I just simply put my trust in it.
Crystals, and to me, on a scientific level, are modulators rather than energy emitters, if that makes sense.
Explain what you mean by modulators.
Well, if you think, I mean, the easiest way that most people can get a grasp on this is if you take a prism and you apply it to a beam of white light, you will get a rainbow at the other end of it. So what it does is it splits the energetic components of light and refracts that light into a different frequency ranges. So that's what they're doing on all levels when you're working with any frequencies that are around you. So they will split those frequencies up into frequencies that maybe, you know, to certain people can be beneficial. But again, I'm sure you must have come across the fact that, you know, some people react in one way to certain crystal, some people react in another way to certain crystal. And for some people, again, certain crystals are very beneficial and seem very positive and have a certain effect, whereas others seem to have slightly different effects.
When I was working with crystals on a full-time basis, I would watch people walk around the counters and pick up a lovely crystal, be drawn to a certain one. And sure enough, when they would come to check out, I would ask them what caught their eye, and was it for them or was it a present?
Yeah.
And inevitably, they would tell me, and let's say it was rose quartz, that beautiful pink quartz.
Yeah.
And I would say, oh, well, that's rose quartz, and it has to do with sending and receiving love. And sometimes their mouth would drop.
Mm-hmm.
It was just exactly what they needed, and they had no idea that that's what that pretty crystal, the meaning for that pretty crystal. So that always fascinated me, and being drawn to types of crystals that I'm not familiar with. Like, I didn't know what the snow leopard crystal was. That's pretty self-descriptive. And yet I was drawn to a lovely small skull made out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was exactly what I needed in my life at the time. So,
and the shape as well. The shape's important, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Whether you've got an earth keeper or a double terminated piece, which, of course, is a natural point at each end, one that has not been cut but natural term, whether it's a Herkimer, which is a multi-cluster, absolutely the shapes have something to do with it. Whether it's a singing crystal that you need to buy in pairs, which shows that you need balance, because when you rub them together, they make music, literally. They sing. That's why they're called singing crystals. And they're not necessarily the prettiest ones on the counter. They're actually kind of lean and skinny and long and cloudy, and yet you gently touch them together and they just make the prettiest music. So,
like I say, it all comes down to, it all comes down to frequency. What we're talking about is frequency. We're talking about sound frequency. We're talking about light frequency. We're talking about electromagnetic frequency and the way that affects each of us and what we may well need at that particular moment.
And not to get off of that, but to me it follows up to what you're just saying, the word frequency. Grids, our earthly grids.
Yes.
And the sacred geometry that goes with grids. How do you think the grids are created, and do you think that they change periodically as our Earth changes?
Yes. The grids, to me, are a natural phenomenon. They are something, it's kind of like looking at a matrix, a building block upon which the physical forms, if you like, energetically the vibration within those grids, and you have to see the grids as microscopic, very, very small kind of grids of interlaced energy that define the physical that's around them. One of the interesting things that I'm kind of getting onto in the book version, which I haven't really touched on in the DVD, is our, well, I have kind of towards the end, is our impact upon those grids, and that's very, very important. I don't know where I can go on this really at this second, but once we start kind of putting, if you like, structures into those grids, crystalline structures, stone structures, water-based structures, and so forth, we're starting to affect those energy lines. Now, if you look into the Chinese belief system, for example, that becomes part of their kind of feng shui, their perception that these energies that are around us are changed by our environment, whether it's a sacred environment in terms of either a church or a stone circle, or whether it's a physical living environment such as houses, we impact upon that grid work. That grid work will also, the energetic basis of it, changes with respect to where the sun is, with respect to where the moon is, with respect to where the planets are, with respect to where we are. It's cyclic. It moves from A to B and B to A in a kind of sine wave. But each of those sine waves then impacts on all the other sine waves, so you kind of get very strange shapes and peaks and troughs all over the place, which is where you get these kind of sensations, and maybe a lot more energy in certain places and a lot less energy or a lot less impact in other places.
I find it interesting that the grids would change. To me, a grid, I look at a grid as though it's made out of steel and it's it can't be changed and altered. That's the way I'd always looked at a grid, but you're saying that it's changing.
No, if you think of a note, if I were to sing a kind of la note like that, it might sound the same note all the way through, but during that kind of spot of singing, that note, the frequency, the kind of harmonics, everything within the note is constantly changing, and that's what, if you like, produces the note, the change rather than static. And that's really, really important, the fact that they do change, because there's constant fluctuation. If they were static, if they were set in place, then the world as we know it would not move, it would not change, it would simply be one thing and that would be it. And we, if you like, would just be for want of a better way of putting it, we'd be a rock, you know, we'd just be boom there and that would be it. There would be, you know, no sense of A to B, B to C, going anywhere, and that's part of, if you like, the universe, this whole change, this whole kind of constant kind of chord, if you like. Pythagoreans kind of saw this, or Pythagoras, in terms of the kind of harmony of the spheres, this kind of underlining music of the whole universe that's constantly changing, constantly shifting. If you're able to listen to it, you can kind of find a space where it is. I guess as a musician, that's where I get a lot of inspiration. And in one respect, there's just this sense of continuousness, and there's this sense of being that's just there, whilst at the same time it's constantly changing, and that's what gives it its color, if you like.
Okay. Okay.
If I'm going off on a tangent or too far, just say, bring me back to Earth.
No. You answered my question. It was my perception, and you used the word perception periodically throughout your DVD. It was not necessarily my training. It was my perception that thought that grids did not change, that once the universe had set them, that's where they belonged.
No, absolutely.
We were affected by them. They were not affected by us.
It's both.
I've been in the desert and knew that, okay, the energy changed. I'm on a grid form here. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, like I say, that's so important. It's so so part of the whole. It's what defines, if you like, I guess, it's what defines that kind of change that we call time, that kind of space, that passing of things. It defines the kind of distance from A to B, and it's very important that it does change. Like I say, if it were simply static, if it were simply solid, we wouldn't be living in a living, breathing world that responds to us because of the nature of the energetic basis.
That responds to us. I like that.
And we respond to it. We're part of a system. A quantum system, if you like, or an energetic system, or a creative system, or you can put it in terms of God, you can put it in terms of angels, whatever your language is, whatever way you think of it, we are part of this kind of continuous system.
Do you think if we put our home on top of a major grid, that it will affect our life and the way our life goes, or will it just alter energy?
It will affect us. It will affect the way we think, and that's what affects the way our life goes, the way we think. If we're, if you like, for want of a better word, energized, then obviously our life's going to be energized. It's going to have a push to it. It's going to have a motive to it. If instead our life is cluttered, if it's kind of solid, if the energy around us is more static or slower, then it is going to impact us on us in exactly the same way. if you think of a tuning fork, if you kind of tap a tuning fork on a solid object, it kind of has this slight ring to it. But you only really get to hear the tuning fork when you put it down on a solid object like a table or maybe on the top of a piano. And what is happening there is you're getting a resonant frequency. The frequency within the tuning fork is being picked up by the wood, the solid, the object that you're putting it on, and it's responding and it's vibrating at the same frequency and producing that tone. And that's exactly what's happening to us with energies. We're kind of immersed in this kind of body of energy that's constantly fluctuating and changing. And if we're in a particular space where that change is slower due to the construct of the space, then it's going to affect us. So yes, it's very important. You know, most people feel energized. It's too general. I was going to say most people feel energized by the countryside. There are those people who also feel energized by cities, by the buzz of that kind of space, and different people kind of get off on different places because it kind of resonates at the same frequency as they do, on a frequency at which they'd like to resonate in order to perpetuate and in order to do with what they want with their lives. So yes,
we have about 3 minutes left. Let's tell people how to reach you.
Okay, well, go onto the internet, type in Steve Mitchell. You'll probably get me fairly high up in the Google ranking. Dragons and Rings will definitely come in the first 10 hits on Google, and you can go to the Dragons and Rings website, www.dragonsandrings.com. Well worth going onto there because I've started putting on a little drip feed of some of the stuff that's going into the book is going on there. So extra information that isn't on the DVD, little kind of things for thought. Some of them are very true. Some of them are kind of, I've put them there on purpose to get people to think, to question things. If you want to buy the DVD, you can buy it from there, but you can go onto Amazon.com, type in again Dragons and Rings, and you'll find us on there. I think Barnes & Noble is another one that you have over in America. We're on Barnes & Noble. You can go onto the Reality Entertainment website, which is www.reality-entertainment.com. Yes, and they all kind of seem to link together, so you'll probably find sites by me on there, sites that have kind of got projects that I've got up and coming as well that are linked through to there.
And if you want to, at some point in time between now and the time that your book is published, if you want to come over and come back again and do some teasers with us, you're welcome
absolutely.
To do that. We have to have
so
you
many,
back when you...
So many teasers.
Well, we'll have to do this again soon. Sweet Seth is going to whisper in my ear
Excellent.
Good night, world. Don't forget to share a smile with somebody this week. Good night, Steve.